What up, what up? It's Double G here on the Fight Game Podcast. That is not John LaRocca for you watching on video. For you listening, you'll hear a voice that should be familiar this upcoming weekend because he's going to be doing Triple Mania 30 Night 3. Larry Dallas, what's going on, my friend?
What's up, brother? It's a pleasure to finally be on the Fight Game Podcast. I'm pumped.
Hey, when were you on with Dave and I? Was that like 3 years ago?
That would have been 2019, right before I went for Kobe World. So
right,
19. No, 20. Was that 8? No, 19. Yeah, 2019. Because the world ended in 20. So yeah, it was 19 that I went over there.
Okay, because
that's when that was the first time Dragon Gate was doing English. It was me and Bokini. You guys had me on. Yeah, that's July. That's July of 19 at this point. That's crazy.
Yeah, and I was trying to remember because I don't know if you do this, but because of the pandemic, I'm a little bit like sometimes the dates, like there's like a whole year where stuff is just crazy and I kind of forget. So I thought it was 3 years, but that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, you and I have kind of communicated through social media.
Yeah.
Since then.
Yeah, I was at your Zoom wedding.
Yeah, you were at the wedding and everything. But you know, it's the first time where we really get to chit chat again, talking about this stuff. So thanks again for being on. John LaRocca, by the way, he won't be on this show because I'm actually out of town by the time that people listen to this. I will be in, I'm technically in upstate New York, with my wife. She's meeting a half brother for the first time. So it's pretty cool story. Larry's going to kind of be the co-host slash guest at the same time. We're going to talk about the Triple Mania show. We'll talk about kind of some of the things that are going on in wrestling. Cause I think Larry has a unique viewpoint in some of the stuff being him having been in wrestling and in locker rooms and stuff. And also, I do want to talk about broadcasting. So I'll save the broadcasting stuff for a little bit later, just in case people are like, oh, you know, that's a little nerdy when it comes to that. But that's just kind of my flavor. Like, I love the broadcasting piece. So Dave and I had Kevin Kelly on.
Yep.
Gosh, this would have been probably like 3 years ago. Same thing. He's been on with Dave and Brian since. But
oh, yeah. Every G1 season.
Yeah. So I hit him up after that show. And I was like, man, like talking about the broadcasting stuff was so fun. I just want to do a show where we just talk broadcasting. And so he's up for it, but then we couldn't because of the time and stuff. So it never happened. But at some point, I want to talk to him about this stuff. But I have you, so we'll talk about that stuff as well. But first, let's start with Triple Mania. So night three, it is the third Triple Mania of the Triple Mania 30 brand. What do you think about the idea of having three big shows all branded Triple Mania with this being the third one?
Well, it seems to work for them because they've been drawing really great crowds to these stadiums. You know, obviously, like the one we did in Guadalajara was really big. Tijuana was big. You know, they're doing these soccer stadiums or these football stadiums, and these arenas are pretty packed, and the crowd's into it. So I think they're delivering in that regard to it. I like the fact that it's kind of spaced out a little bit. As you know, I know from working them back when it was just Ring of Honor and Gabe verse WrestleMania weekends, they were long.
Yeah.
I think separating them out over this is pretty cool, especially the way they did the tournaments. You know, like the Ruleta de Muerte, where it was like the loser advance tournament. So the main event on Saturday is going to be a Pentagon or a whatever incarnation of his name is using now, but Pentagon Jr. Penta L0M is going to be facing Viano 4 for the the mask versus mask match. And that was a tournament that happened over 3 nights, starting with 8 men. So I think things like that being drawn out gave more time for the drama to happen, for people to get built up for it. So I don't dislike the idea of 3 nights spread out over a couple of months.
So if we go all the way back to on April 30th, yep, that was the first night of Triple Mania 30. The Young Bucks were in the main event against the Vikingo and Phoenix. And, you know, you fast forward these other two shows and there's no real U.S. Wrestlers who are adding to this card. Do you think do you think not having, you know, actually, I guess I'll take that back, because John Morrison, Sam Adonis, Brian Cage, they're on the show, but I'm more so talking like, you know, the big AEW folks, who aren't on the, do you think that hurts it in any way? Or is it just sort of kind of, you know, the evolution of trying to do so many shows like this, and you just can't book everybody that you want to book?
I think it's going to come down to how big Phoenix means and Pentagon mean for the U.S. market, because they're technically AEW stars in America, mm-hmm. but, you know, people would, you know, people in Mexico would consider them AAA talent. So I think it's going to be a test in that regard to see how big of a draw they are in America. Obviously the Viano match with Pentagon, you know, being in the main event with the mask at stake, I don't know how much the American audience is going to buy into, you know, the coin flip aspect of that matchup. But, you know, when you have Phoenix versus Vikingo for the mega championship, that's something that I think the hardcore fans that want to watch really great action will get really into. But yeah, no, it's been interesting to watch it start from having the Young Bucks in the main event to the first one. And then, you know, then we were supposed to have the Hardy Boys at night two in the main event. And obviously, you know, Jeff had gotten into the situation he got into.
Yeah.
You know, Johnny, you know, John Morrison, or, you know, Johnny Caballero, whatever name he goes by now, you know, got slotted into the main event there. So that was a little bit of disappointment. I think that's the danger when you do these things. I think you see it in MMA too, right? With when Bellator or these other companies do these tournaments,
yeah,
that are drawn out, there's always something happens, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's always a guy that gets injured or in training or whatever. And then there's I very rarely think it goes from the 8-person bracket to the finals without there being some sort of change in it over a couple of months. And I think you see that with the scheduling when you do this type of stuff without, especially without contracts.
Right.
You know, everyone else is signed to other places. They're going to have other things come up and real life situations come up. And obviously there's been a lot that's happened in the past couple of months. So.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to the broadcast, so you're going to be doing it from your home, correct? Like this, how does that work? How are you set up for that?
This weekend we do it from home. The last two Triple Manias we did from Mexico. We did it in the stadiums, which was really wild, because we were up in we were in like the booths that you would see it, like, you know, if you're watching the baseball playoffs right now.
Yeah.
We're in those booths.
Yeah.
We're in those things, which was absolutely buck wild to like sit around and look at. Doing it from home is a little different. It's hard to, I'm sure Kevin Kelly would say the same thing during a pandemic. It's hard to get yourself up for it as much because you're not at the arena. You know, so like instead of me sitting at the arena for 5 hours beforehand, walking around, checking out all the empty seats, just kind of psyching myself up or BSing with the people that are there that I know, you know, I'll be sitting on the couch watching like NCIS reruns, trying not to get into something, you know, just be like, all right, what's on TV? What can I, you know, pass by another hour with? Because you're just kind of sitting around waiting to go on. And then, you know how it is. Then you get worried about the internet connection and weather and every other thing that could possibly go wrong. It's scary, and it's happened a couple of times that we've done it from home where like inevitably at some point feed goes out and then like you have to restart it. Thankfully Dombrowski's the play-by-play guy, so if I drop off, it's not the worst thing in the world. And if he drops off, I'm capable of doing play-by-play where needed, but there is that aspect to it which gets a little dicey. But you know, it's just like anything else. The world has changed drastically since we first spoke about going over to Japan and stuff like that. Now so much can be done from home, and it's a cheaper, more economical option for a lot of people.
I remember, you talk about how it's changed. What, not the current iteration of Jim Ross's podcast, which I'm assuming he does from home, him and Conrad jump on a Zoom or whatever. But I remember like the first iteration of the Jim Ross podcast, he was actually going into a radio studio so that he had an engineer so that they could record it and they could set up whatever feeds they needed to set up. But now, you know, you and I are doing this through a technology called Squadcast. So, you know, you're where you are. I'm all the way on the other side of the U.S. And, you know, we have a connection and we're able to do this. So it's you're right. It's crazy how things have changed.
We use KIWSE Studio. I don't know how to say the name of it, but that's what we usually use. I think Fight TV uses that for the remote. But I mean, even going back to when I was on the radio, you know, I would go to the Manhattan. we would do the show live from 6th Avenue, right across the street from the Fox News building. So, like, that was the SiriusXM building. Uh-huh. So anyone that ever watches Fox, the football, Strahan, that built, we were right across the street from that. But, like, Bubba lived in Connecticut. Bubba would go to ESPN studios. And, you know, these engineers can make all this stuff connect from different areas, and it all links up. And now a lot of the radio guys I know work from home. And it's just, if they don't have the TV, if they're not streaming on TV, like Boomer and Geo do in the morning, like a lot of the overnight guys are doing it overnight from home and stuff like that. And they run into the same issues with the, at any moment, the modem resets, you're screwed.
Now, when you're doing this, I don't imagine that you and your partner are going to have like your cell phones FaceTiming so you can see each other. You guys are just going through your headphones. So it's all about what you can hear. And you have to set each other up for cues and stuff. So it's not like you can turn to him and give him a signal, like, you know, something. So it's all done through the ears, and you got it. So you're just listening.
You got the screen, like we're looking at each other. There's usually a screen there where you can see everyone that's involved.
Okay, so you do have some then. Yeah,
but it's not. But you're not looking at that because you're looking at the
right
the feed, obviously.
Right.
And then there's like a little chat, like where we have inside baseball here for people that are not going to see this part of it. But there's that chat screen for us.
Sure.
It's the same exact thing. But again, how often are you looking at it?
Yes.
So that becomes the issue with the communication at that point. I mean, me and Dombrowski have done a couple of shows together now, and he's really good as far as a play by play guy goes, as far as just having emotion and energy. So like I trust him. And, you know, he's going to let it breathe where it breathes. And, you know, my job's to hit the spots and analyze what I need to analyze and jump in when I need to. And that's the hard part about being color, I guess. Like when you start off, you want to talk so much and then you kind of learn to pick your spots and less is more. And my job's, you know, I'll get over with the product getting over. You know, I don't need to get myself over. And you see that a lot of times with color guys, especially less experienced ones. They on the indies and all that, they're always trying to get themselves over, and wrestlers complain about it on Twitter and stuff like that. You can't you'll get over by being naturally, you know, engaged in the matchup, you know?
Yeah, I've never done it. I've always thought about how kind of fun it would be, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, I can barely remember what these moves are called. Like,
no, that's so
you know,
scary.
Just writing, like, you know, writing notes and stuff. I'm just like, oh, what is this move called again? And then I got to do like a Google search to have the name. But that part of it is fascinating to me because people, like, you look at Excalibur. Like, Excalibur knows the name of every single possible move that happens. And it's just right off the top of his mind. Like, amazing. I'm guessing he's just very well researched and you know, he's so prepared. But on the flip side, the what I've seen from what you're talking about, which is like the, you know, the announcers who may be a little junior, exactly what you said, which is they are trying to create energy instead of letting the match create the energy. And you hear the voice kind of go up an octave and a half and you're like, okay, guy, your voice is cracking here during this moment. You know, just let it happen. But. You know, it's not an easy job, like describing what is in front of you. You would think, you know, me and my buddy back in the day, we'd go to like a Warriors game and I'd be like doing fake play by play and he'd be doing fake color. And, you know, you have fun with it. And it's like, it's actually not that hard. But I mean, there's so many components to a broadcast that add to it. So when you're doing this, And you know, you're trying to make sure that you're calling everything the way that you want to call it. Like, do you have like a producer or is this just you and your partner?
Japan, we definitely didn't have producers over there. And sometimes at the studio, if we went to Gayora Studios in Japan, there would be a guy that would talk to us, like, and be like, good job, or this or that. Mexico. I mean, they have a production team, obviously, but there's no one in our ears. We'll get our criticism and feedback like a week later when everyone watches it back. So we're not getting it live. With Mexico, the funny part, the hardest part is like Sin Caras' kids, the Nueva Generación Dinamitas, like they all wear the same mask. And I swear to God, if you look them up, if you don't watch the product, you never Nueva Generación Dinamitas. The only thing that's different about the three of them is the symbol that's on their tights.
Oh, okay.
And yeah. And you obviously know, you know, in the six man, like AEW, in the six man tag, Lucha Rules or Dragon Gate, right, guy right. in, guy out, guy in, guy out.
Yeah.
They are a nightmare to call because you're sitting there and I have their symbols written down and you're looking at the match and you're trying to figure out like which one was which. That would happen in Japan with the machines. They did that with Strong Machine J, who is the son of the Super Strong Machine, the famous one from Japan, where like Andre and Demolition Axe and Blackjack Mulligan were in the 80s, like the machines. That gimmick was in Japan first. It was him, it was Don Fuji, and it was Gamma, were like Machine G, Machine F. They all had the black masks on and the singlets. And like, unless you knew Fuji and Gamma's like body type, you're watching it, you have no idea who's in there. That part's confusing. But as far as the moves go, like, you'll be surprised how many moves you remember.
Yeah.
Until it happens. It's like, yeah. I guess it's like a dance site, like dancer, like music, right? All of a sudden you hear the beat and all of a sudden the words come flooding back to you, but you couldn't do it dry.
Right.
I think it's like that sometimes.
All right. We'll come, excuse me. We'll come back to the broadcasting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I have a lot more questions about that, but kind of like, I'm interested in your thoughts on what's going on in wrestling today. The last time that we would have talked with Dave, the yeah. U.S. landscape is completely different, right? AEW had they even started? Had they had that pay per view yet? The first Double or Nothing show when we chatted?
No, because Pac was still with Dragon Gate. Pac finished up with us that weekend. I think the first show would have been after that.
Okay, so now, you know, fast forward, AEW exists. AEW is a very competitive number two to WWE. Vince McMahon, who had been in charge of WWE for as long as you and I have been alive, is now not in charge. Triple H is in charge. Nick Khan is in charge. Stephanie McMahon in charge. So when it comes to the overall landscape of, you know, you've been watching wrestling, you've been involved in wrestling. Yeah. Like, do you sense that pro wrestling in the U.S. today is very healthy, is like great? Like from your perspective, like you're someone who is looking for opportunities in this business. Like, are there more opportunities because of where the business is, or does that make it, you know, even more cutthroat with its competition? Like, how are you looking at this version of the U.S. wrestling scene as far as, not only, you know, prospects for you, but also just like as a fan, like, are you excited, you know, Wednesday night and Monday night and Friday night? Like, how do you look at this stuff?
I mean, I think Hunter excites a lot of people, you know, at least people I talk to. Obviously, you know, when you go Paul Levesque, you think NXT guys, you think Gabe Sapolsky, and then you think that rope's going to be pulled. You know, that's going to rise up, you know, rising tide, you know, whatever, all ships. So like, it's gonna like, you know, you think it's gonna take some people up there. I think him being in charge is exciting because for people that maybe, and you see it, like Gargano went back there.
Yeah.
That stuff's healthy. The fact that it has guys like Gargano, and you see what's happening, like Walter or Gunther being, you know, in the level that he's at and being able to have the matches, like that match he had with Sheamus on that Saturday afternoon. You know, Clash of the Castle, like just seeing a match like that in a WWE ring with a WWE branding on it was like, whoa, like this is game changing. And I think people were excited about Tony when he started AEW, obviously because it was a new promotion, and you know, obviously it got a lot of people jobs and a lot of people that wouldn't have gotten the opportunities at WWE. I think Paul being in charge means that guys that might have been lifers in NXT are going to have better opportunities on a main roster. I think you see that with certain people, like LA Knight just got his name back, right? He just dropped it on Friday. So like, there's guys that obviously you think Paul liked or Hunter liked on NXT that are getting opportunities. I think that's exciting. I think you see the changes in things. It's exciting. I think like, to me, WWE guys were always like, especially broadcasting was like always very produced. So I always felt bad for them because people would trash the commentary. And I'm like, they got a lot of traffic. You know, there's a lot of traffic calling that show. I mean, you got the bumpers in, the bumpers out. You got to talk about the main event on Monday night. You got some guy in your ear yelling. Like, that's got to be an impossible job. I don't care who you are. So like, you know, Corey and more, all those guys to do that takes a lot of talent. I think having that micromanagement pressure off is only good for everybody. And I think it excites a lot of people, you know? So I think it's healthier. It's hard to say, but the money seems to be better for people.
Yeah. And that should be for everybody, right? Should be for when there's competition, should be for the wrestlers, should be for the announcers, anybody involved in TV production and everything. When it comes to, I was trying to play off of something that you just said. Oh, so Tony Khan made a comment recently in saying that because Triple H is now in charge, that they may be going after some of the same people because their perspectives of pro wrestling are probably a little bit closer than, say, Tony's and Vince's. And so I wonder if is that good for the business? Is that good for the wrestlers? Because if more people who may have been shunned are now getting opportunities, I would imagine that, oh, yeah, we want to have action. We want to have good wrestling. You mentioned the Walter match, which you're right, doesn't happen under Vince McMahon's watch.
No.
And it seems like the idea that you have two hardcore wrestling fans running wrestling companies means that the wrestling perspective of it, the in-ring, the things that hardcore fans like probably are a little bit more apparent in the major companies now.
Well, you got player coaches, right? Like, or players coaches, like you're saying NFL, like, oh, he's a player's coach. He's, you know, he's not, and that has its benefits to it, obviously. Right. But we're seeing also on the flip side of that, where there's a negative to being a player's coach and where you need that leadership that maybe Vince brought to the table. I mean, Hunter hasn't shown any of those cracks in his armor yet with stuff like that. Everything seems to be going smooth. I think it's a good thing if you have people that know wrestling running wrestling. It's funny. I was just reading, for some reason, I went back to like 1992 Observers. I don't know why. I get on these kicks sometimes. Where, like, I want to go back and read about stuff. So I was reading about the Watts stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously, and Dave was talking about Kip Fry. And how he had no wrestling knowledge, but he wanted to come in there. He was basically talking about how, which is very funny because it paralleled a lot to today when I was reading it yesterday. How, you know, WWE is number one, and it's number one by a lot.
Yeah.
And you got to come out swinging to be number two, or you got to decide that you're always going to be turning over talent and you're never going to have top guys for a long time because of everything. And that Kip was like a guy that was like, we're going to go out there and fight them and do all this stuff, but he had no idea about wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, Pillman got that $200,000 contract or whatever it was. Bill comes in, wants to cut that contract, wants to cut Sting's contract, wants to cut Rude's contract. And it's just, you read that and it's like, whoa. Because like now, here we are, right? It's 2022 and WWE is a clear number one. AEW is right there. And we have these contract issues now again going on, right? Yeah. It's like, I'm literally was like in a time warp. What is that now? 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Reading it going like, this is this year. This is this year in a different way. So it's interesting. As long as people are making money and there's opportunities, that's great. Like, you just saw Nigel get cut, right? Nigel McGuinness got cut. Nigel McGuinness is probably is a great color commentator. He's a great commentator. Anytime you'd watch him, I guess I would watch him on the takeovers for NXT UK. He was fantastic. But where's he going to go now? You know, and does he want to just get signed and sit home? Because Tony has 150 guys sitting there, you know, and he's using 25 or 30 of them a week or whatever it is.
You would think that if ROH gets off the ground and has its own television show, you got to make room for the guy because, like you said, he is so good.
Nigel should be it. Or I was thinking about this today, actually, like Nigel with Kevin. I mean, he has no New Japan ties, but, you know, Rocky's the talent liaison for a lot of that stuff. Yeah. You can move Nigel over there with Kevin. That might be something that works for them over there.
That's very interesting.
Because Nigel knows that style. So I was thinking about that today. Like, where would Nigel go? Like, where could Nigel go? Obviously, Ring of Honor would work, or New Japan would work for him.
What did you think of WWE letting Jimmy Smith go? Jimmy Smith comes from MMA, not a whole lot of knowledge of pro wrestling, but he kind of worked. And I thought he made it work to the level of, I wasn't going to say he's like one of the best guys, but I was surprised that he handled it so well. He's a professional broadcaster. He would add the little elements of the MMA when need be. Yeah. But with the, you know, the shakeup of the announcers, season premiere, Triple H is kind of putting his imprint on stuff. What did you think about him get them getting rid of him.
I think it's like when they change quarterbacks, you know, new GM, new coach, new quarterback. You know, it's just every place you ever work. I mean, if the company you work for merges, you know, there's going to be talent that gets let go that probably doesn't need to, but they want to bring their own VPs in. And I think he's a victim of that. You know, he was in a marquee position, a very changeable marquee position. So they can change that, put his new stamp on it. And you're not changing, like, it's a slight change, but it's one where he can put his fingerprints on now and have his guys in there that he wants to do things his way. I mean, that's the way I view it from the outside. Obviously, I don't know what goes on in those rooms and stuff. I thought his quote was very interesting, where he talked about how he got he didn't know if Cormier and Riddle had any heat for any reason.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then Riddle said, well, maybe he's upset that I out wrestled John Jones and he could, which I thought was also very cool.
No, yeah, it was great.
And then he gives the note to Hunter, and Hunter's like, all right, give that to Michael. And he's like, why would I give that to Michael? Like, he's like, oh, he's like, and he knew he was fired at that moment. That story's fantastic. Yeah. And I was watching that the other day, that was fantastic because he just kind of knew at that moment. And but he said, he's like, listen, man, I didn't expect to be here. You know, I never thought I'd do this. So it doesn't really affect me that I'm gone.
Yeah.
And that's a great attitude because, I mean, at the end of the day, you get a run in this industry, right? You don't usually get careers.
Right.
For every Jim Ross, there's 15 Sean Mooneys.
And the one who's got the long career at WWE, Michael Cole, you would have never thought when he came in. I mean, he comes in and he's basically fodder for D-Generation X, right? They're giving him. They're pulling his underwear out of his pants and they're tripping him. And he's like fodder, but you know, he's been there for so long. He became, you know, the guy who runs the broadcasting team. So it's kind of cool to see, cause he was a real guy before he joined wrestling. Like he was a real journalist. So very interesting to see. But you know, I was talking to Dave over the weekend and he said he thought it could have been Kevin Dunn call to where, you know, every time they have these like season premieres and you kind of want to show change, even if you don't need to show change.
Yeah.
So he thought it was something like that. But I was thinking the same thing as you, is like, you know, Triple H putting his stamp on it. But I don't know. Booker T to NXT, that one kind of made me scratch my head. I don't imagine Booker T is that big of a fan of that kind of style of wrestling.
I would imagine not. That one jumps out at you too. But the Kevin Dunn thing is interesting because that sounds like a very network TV sports thing, right? NFL. Every year there's a new broadcaster. Yeah. There's a new name. SiriusXM does it all the time. Someone retires, someone comes in, someone gets pushed out. So that it does sound very... Because you sometimes you're in the bubble of wrestling and you think like only wrestling, and like, you know, that might just be a real world. That might be a Nick Khan thing, like,
right,
you know,
right,
coming from
right.
that background of knowing things. And but you got to change this up every year or so to keep things fresh, because I mean, every single sports program does that.
Yeah.
Every single one does that.
Yeah. I mean, you saw, you know, to kind of back up what you're saying. So all the major NFL teams, except for the CBS team, changed this year.
Yes.
Joe Buck and Troy Aikman went to ESPN to do Monday Night Football. So now Monday Night Football has like a legit like A1 team.
Yep.
So who replaces them at Fox? Well, it's Greg Olson
and
Burkhard. Who's, you know, they've only been doing it together for like a year, I think, a year or two maybe.
And Burkhard came from my Mets. He was our he was our crowd report. He worked he was an intern at WFAN at one point too.
Yeah.
I think he worked at a car dealership, you know, when he was doing all that stuff.
He's got Mad Dog stories. I know that.
Oh, well, Mad Dog's one of the most generous. Mad Dog, I got Mad Dog stuff. Like, Mad Dog's great. Like, Mad Dog is my favorite part, which is being around him. That guy's one of the most generous human beings I ever watched in my life. He's just, and he's so nice. Just such a nice sweetheart of a man.
Did you see JJ Redick kind of tear him up, though?
JJ tore, what, on ESPN?
So, yeah, it was on ESPN. Mad Dog kind of did the thing to Draymond Green, kind of the whole shut up and just play basketball kind of thing. And JJ Redick's like, nope, not anymore, buddy. Like you can't talk to athletes like that anymore. All the announcer changes were really interesting. What do you think about McAfee? Pat McAfee is the most interesting one of them all to me, because he is not like, I wouldn't even consider him like a professional broadcaster. He's just like content creator extraordinaire, right?
Yeah.
Like the guy has like created his own little media company of him and his buddies, and they do their YouTube show. he goes on WWE SmackDown and he basically says, yeah, I'm kind of doing like I'm losing money doing this job, but I just love it. He's doing the college football thing now, which is taking him off. I feel like I don't know this to be true, but I think his star is rising so high that WWE may eventually be, you know, he may outgrow them at some point. But just the idea that, I mean, McAfee has the NFL background. He's got a legit background. He played football. So that's where he starts. He starts as a pro athlete. But what he's doing isn't really any different from what you and I are doing. But he's just mastered the content creation piece of it. And he's got this giant fan base. I look at that guy and I go, man, that guy, not enough people understand what he did and how hard it was. He's going to grow into this role as just being one of the, you know, one of the top guys in the game. And it's just kind of just like, you know, he's building his own platform, which is really tremendous to see.
Who's the other one that does like the successful Chris Van Vliet? Is that his
Van
name?
Vliet.
Van Vliet. Like I watch his stuff a lot because obviously, you know, anyone that interviews The Rock, I'm like, I get jealous of that one. I'm like, he got The Rock. Like, that's cool.
As I see your sweatshirt there.
Yes. Well, you know, I figure if you just wear The Rock's clothes, maybe you'll get The Rock's body.
Well, look what I'm drinking. I'm drinking Zoa. So.
You watch stuff like him and he talks about like, as long as you just create, you start one, you're on the right path. Like, I don't necessarily always agree with that philosophy, but like, I get it. I get the advice there for people. But like McAfee just, he got to be himself.
Yeah.
Wasn't he the one that got in trouble for wearing the short tux? Yeah. Right? Like, they were like, you can't wear that. He's like, what? This is fashion. It's in style. And like, you know, he just, if he's like that example of you're successful enough that you can kind of tell people, you know, where to stick it or where to put their opinions and you can be yourself. He got like an unfair advantage in that regard.
Right.
Because he came in with the ability to be like, I'm going to do whatever I want to do.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take away from the show. And he became even better at it.
What stops Larry Dallas from creating the Larry Dallas brand and having a YouTube show and having a podcast? And you have connections in the business, you know, talent. Like, I'm sure that has crossed your mind, but also you have a real day job as well. So it's a hobby and it's a passion, but like, why aren't you doing more stuff like that?
Cause I would not watch enough of what needs to be watched to be a valuable voice in the echo chamber. You know, the days of me sitting home and watching, you know, Raw for 3 hours and then NXT on Tuesday nights and then AEW on Wednesday nights and then SmackDown and Rampage on Friday nights. And
it is,
you know, and those are the majors. Those are the ones you like to even remotely cover this industry. Those are the ones you have to do in America. You know, if you want to start covering Japan, like the guy that used to work for 411 that passed away, Zanka, I used to wake up every morning, just read his reviews of everything. Cause I just found it so fascinating. Like, you watch everything. Like, now granted that was his only job, but like, you watched everything.
And you got to love it, man, to do
that
it.
Guy's a legend. And as a kid, I watched everything. I traded for tapes. I got 5 tapes in a day, but like now, like, you know, like, dude, I like what I bartend. I have a girlfriend. I have a life. I like going out to dinner. I like going to the movies. I like watching the Mets. I have Knicks season tickets. Like, you know, there's things I do with my life that if it's not making me money at 38 years old, I don't want to do it. And I don't have that passion to get on here and create content for people. Plus, I think there's people that do it better than me. You know, I listen to sports radio most days, and I listen to you and Dave, and I listen to Brian and Dave. Like, those are things I like. Because you understand, I usually work nights, so my days are free.
Yeah.
Those are things that I make a point of listening to on a daily basis, like my morning sports radio, any Observer radio. And there's people that do a better job covering it than I do, than I would want to do.
I mean, but you have legitimate radio broadcasting experience.
Yeah.
I think the first time I heard you, I don't know if this brings up negative memories or not, but the MLW show.
Oh, yeah, Flagship.
The first time that I had heard
that, that turned me off from doing this. Like, because obviously, like, it's Sirius, and I'll just be, I have no problem saying these things. So, like, when I started with Sirius, I had no experience.
Yeah.
It was, I had met LaGreca through things, and I was filling in for free for I was working a regular job during the week, doing the wrestling when I could. And then when they wanted me, I'd go in and cover, and I would, you know, it was whatever to get down to the city. Figure that's a $25 train ride plus park, so call it 30. So I was losing, no big deal, right? If I drove in, you're talking $70 a park again. And that's why, like, people this generation frustrates me with that. They're like, because they complain about, like, the slight. It's like you're supposed to lose money doing things. Like, yeah. any franchisee, any business owner, any entrepreneur would expect to lose money for 2 or 3 years, right? Yeah. Like, that's in books. But anyway, so then when I got my first contract as a fill in, it was $100 a show, which again, I was probably breaking even now because I'm getting taxed. Yeah. And then the last contract was for $175, but I was getting 3 days a week. Which was frustrating in itself because there's a monthly train pass you can get to the city, but that did not work out economically enough for me to want to get that.
Yeah.
And I was working at the time when I was on Sirius, when I was at that last year at Sirius, I was working FedEx in the morning for benefits, from like 7 to 10:30. They gave you full benefits for doing part time. So all you had to do it was, and I said to wrestlers, well, if you're out there and you're looking for, if you want to be do something like this, it's a hustle for you, but you need FedEx will give you full benefits for part-time work. And it's like literally like 3 hours a day you have to give them. You have to bust your hump, move packages, deliver. I mean, you're in a FedEx uniform. It's very demoralizing if you have these like grandiose views of yourself. Like I was doing that, then going on a national radio show, like interviewing Billy Corgan, then bartending and my customers falling asleep at the bar. Like that was my day, you know? So like that part was, so when I thought the money was going to come after the next contract, obviously I didn't get re-signed. Went to MLW. That was set up on paid for like if the advertisers came, we'd get a cut, and like that system just sucked.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like it just was not. And then like there was issues like Bokini, like, you know, because now we're like setting up our days to work with each other, and it just that sucked like every little bit of passion I had left in my body to do that. I didn't find my passion again until I went back to Japan. I swear to God, like when I went back to Japan, it was like light bulb went on, switch went off. I'm like, I'm home, I'm happy. But like, I mean, God bless people that do it and the content creators, and there's people I follow or I don't follow that I see. The mm-hmm. same usual suspects that are always getting trouble every ratings day. Like the guy that clearly gets fed the ratings when it's
yeah,
bad.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I don't even want to say his name because he's not worth my time.
I know who you're talking about. People who are listening to this know.
People know who I'm talking about. Yeah, yeah. So that guy clearly gets fed shit, right? And he's getting paid off of the clicks and views. I could not be a slip. Like the whole
charcuterie board is all.
Yeah, the whole idea of doing this job, right, is to have freedom.
Sure.
Ideally, right? You want to be artistically free, or you're doing this. You don't want a 9-to-5 job. To then sell my soul to that point where I'm pouring myself out to do that, like in such bad faith, in such a way where like there's no credibility to what I'm saying, that is worse to me punching in a clock and punching out. Like that you just have no spine. I couldn't do that. So that's why the long answer to a short question. That's part of the reason why it's hard for me to do that stuff.
Obviously, Dragon Gate bringing you in when they did, mm-hmm. AAA. Bringing you in, there's obviously a wanting to see if there's a U.S. audience for this product, right?
Yeah,
because I would think also that part of that negotiation would be how do we reach that U.S. audience who cannot watch our television because our television isn't on in the U.S. And so a weekly podcast going over what's going on in the news, what's going on, that makes sense to me. But then also you have to, you know, so that kind of sounds like it would fit to me, but
that would work. And like that would be something like where like I would do that with like Hugo, you know, or in the cases like that, it's like Dragon Gate had Jay. Jay was a great US ambassador to them. He translated everything to English. He was a Dragon Gate super fan. They can give things to. He communicated with that audience trusted him, you know. Lucha Libre, you know, you have Cubs, you got Bahari, but they don't seem, from what I pick up on, they're not as like welcomed into the echo chamber as I see Jay was with Dragon Gate. I mean, obviously, I mean, Jay would call shows with me. If anyone doesn't know Jay, I think it's DGJ, J-A-E. We would do shows together when Lenny wasn't over there, obviously before the whole world, you know, went where it went. And like, they wouldn't have him in a locker room for the meeting.
Wow.
They would have, like, he'd be upstairs that I was in, he wasn't. And I'm like, guys, I'm like, he's the play-by-play guy. Like he needs to know more than I need to know. Like, you know, it's just, it wasn't even worth arguing about with stuff like that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, no, it's very funny. But like, when it comes to specialized things like Lucha or you know, Dragon Gate or other Japanese, there's also great creators out there doing that, like, yeah. Open to Voice Gate, Voices
right.
of Wrestling.
Right, Voice of Wrestling.
Lucha sure. Blog does that great. I mean, I read that every week now, just results of every, those guys are doing such a great job that it's also like, where are you going to create that market for yourself? And I don't want to attach myself to a C-minus show. Like, I'd want to be like, I only want to do stuff with the people that I respect or that I think is the best to do things with. So,
No, I get it. I totally get what you're saying. Okay. Another thing that happened in wrestling now that we're a few weeks past this, but you understand the dynamics of a pro wrestling locker room. Mm-hmm. And when the CM Punk and the Young Bucks thing happened,
I've been punched in the face before.
and still, that was All Out weekend. I was there at that show. I did not stay for the scrum, but I was there. And now we are in October. So that's already, you know, months in, and still no solution to whatever's going on. This investigation, from what I understand, it's been a little lengthier based on, for some reason, than they would like, but we still have no idea what's going to happen to the Bucks. We don't know what's going on with Kenny. When are we going to see those guys on TV again? Punk is hurt, but that whole thing, like, when you saw that happen, were you surprised? Were you aghast? Like, I was aghast because I saw Tony Khan watching CM Punk, like, just go all in. And I'm just like, when is this dude going to cut his mic? Like, let's figure out how to get this guy out. But like, you know, this is wrestling. This is a little bit different than if this was to happen on an NBA basketball team. Right. So what were your thoughts when all that stuff went down?
I went back and forth like five times over like the first 48 hours of like whose side I was on or who I was like, because I would text, you know, I text Lenny Leonard a lot. And like, that's who I would talk. Stuff like this goes down, like, it's Lenny and I texting back and forth. Because obviously we both kind of know players involved in different ways or for different periods of time. At first it was a fantastic promo, right? I mean, like, Punk's ability to talk and be engaging while speaking is unbelievable. It's almost unmatched. Moxley's probably up there with him on the when he speaks, you listen.
Yeah.
You know, paradigm. You know, like, level of who you're going to pay attention to. But it was, you know, it was so. It wasn't the place to air that. I interviewed Punk once, and that was before his fight with the first fight.
Yeah, UFC. I know
whoever that guy was. He's still around, I think. But it was that first guy he fought. I interviewed Punk for, and like, obviously he was not exactly the most welcoming interview subject.
He's cutting weight. He's learning how to fight.
I gave him a lot of credit for that one. Like obviously he's miserable, and then he has to deal with me. And, you know, it is what it is. Tony was in a rough position, and he's in a tough position because, you know, maybe you do got to throw the baby out with the bathwater, to use like a very old term where I'm probably aging myself. But, you know, like, because it is what it is. And it's only grown since then. The issues seem to be, I guess there's a reason why, like, the inmates don't run asylums, right? And,
right.
And for as much criticism as you might give Vince probably was the way Vince was because years of life experience taught him that was the way to be. And you'll see that in business, right? There's people that'll be like, oh, you know, if you let them, like, working from home, there's probably some guys that are in their 60s or 70s that, like, run companies that are having strokes every day by not being able to know what someone's doing at their desk all times, right? I know there is, because I've worked for them when I was younger, like people like that when I was younger. Vince was probably like, Vince dealt with outlaws, and he probably had a way of doing things. And fear was the way that you controlled people. and Tony's coming in with the new parenting technique, and he's these new millennial moms. You know, you don't yell at your kids. You know, you don't tell them bad things. You don't correct them. Like, you know, whatever. You read all the crap on the parenting things on the internet nowadays, and it's like that. And it's like, well, here you go. This is what your kids grew up to be when they have no discipline.
Tony Khan using the Dr. Spock method. I didn't expect us to have that.
That's what it seems like, you know, from the outside looking in, obviously, because he's trying to, you know, he's being, and that's the problem. He's being an ambassador for people that maybe don't deserve ambassadorship or don't deserve someone fighting for them that much. Like they always said, like, you'll never unionize wrestlers, right? They've always said that because at the end of the day, there's too much money at stake and there's too much. That's the funny part about the fake echo chamber we live in, right? Is that it's not talent that gets you there then. No one's going to argue with Tom Brady making $45 million, right? But in wrestling, they'll argue about, and Gabe was great at this. I learned this from Gabe, and Gabe learned it from Paul. It was, because I remember this, we went to China, and he brought me, and he brought Mercutio now on NWA, but like Earl Cooter, Brian Idol, whatever name he's going by. And God, did they hate Cooter, man. Like the guys on that tour, like they didn't like, there's people at that point, there was people I got along with. There's people that whatever. And it was him. It was Jody Christofferson was there fresh off WWE. And he was talking about NXT guys all the whole tour.
Yeah.
And I mean, the guys are hating him too. And I looked at Gabe and Gabe said, he goes, this is why you always keep guys like that around. Because now instead of them worrying about what I'm screwing them on, they're not saying those words exactly, but they're worried about why that guy's here.
Yeah.
That doesn't belong here, instead of worrying about what you're getting paid, what the hotel situation's like, what the they're worried about that guy, that distraction right there is what now consumes their thoughts. And meanwhile, you're taking everything out the back door. Tony doesn't have that, you know? So like he needs a guy like that too, or like everyone's
Sammy.
Maybe
it's Sammy.
That's probably why Sammy's still there. You know, people don't realize that's probably why Sammy's there. Sammy's the distraction guy. Like, everyone's mad at Sammy. No one's asking questions. Like that's what happens. It's a strategy as old as time.
Yeah.
And I told you privately that, you know, the problem with Punk, the Bucks, and Omega was that none of them drank.
Yeah, yeah.
Or do drugs. So there was no waking up the next morning like regretting
what
happened. Like if they had that, they would have woke up a little bit ashamed. They would have had to apologize, begrudgingly apologize. They would have felt bad about themselves. They were also stone sober, which is a good thing, but they were also stone sober. They're very dug into how they feel. If they would have been a little bit more reckless in life, they'd have a little bit more regret and be a little bit more apologetic because they always think that at least it's partly their fault.
By the way,
I
wouldn't usually have to say this, but Larry is not telling people to drink and get on drugs.
No. I'm just saying that if those guys were drinking at that moment, they would have woke up the next morning and felt bad.
Yeah, yeah.
And the fact that they were all sober, they're all very coherent about the whole situation. I'm telling you, it would have changed the whole history of everything. I know I'm right about that. I know I'm right about that.
So what do you think about these guys who, you know, we hear that there's talent at AEW, mm-hmm. who you know, maybe a little bit closer to Triple H than they were to Vince, and now they see that Triple H is the boss and possibility of going back, but signing the contract to work for AEW, they're independent contractors, but they signed a contract, and so there's this like really murky scenario with talent and being a part of one company even though you're a contractor, like. The idea that, you know, you sign a contract, you're here and you can't go to the other place, but you want to be at the other place. So now you're trying to get fired so that you can go to the other, like, it's wacky to me, this whole thing.
Isn't Dave's old story always like, you know, like, oh, Vince loved me, but that son of a bitch Pritchard or that son of a bitch Ross.
JR,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Screwed me. So like now Hunter's in charge, right? So like, well, Vince didn't like me, but Hunter's got my back, right?
Yeah,
and it's like Bobby Fish kind of impacted his way out of that, you know, it looks like.
Yeah.
And I love Bobby as a person, you know.
Bobby's like going to do a boxing debut.
In Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Right now he's boxing in Abu Dhabi. But it's just like, that's what it seems like to me. It's like all of a sudden you're the guy you wanted's back in charge, and the grass is not always greener, right? I mean, how many times do you leave a job thinking it's going to be better? And it's like, oh, the money's better, or the money's a little bit less, or you get, there's always something else out there. And I think that's the Hunter effect. Like, Hunter's the butterfly effect of a lot of those things, that he's back and he's in charge now. So people want to go see what Hunter has for them, because they're not getting, I mean, realistically, they're not getting a lot of work on AEW weekly. They're just not, there's not enough TV time to get all those people that are talented that want to go out there and have 20 minute matches and be creatively free to do that. And it's a shame. It really is. It's a shame. And I don't know the answer for it, but I mean, obviously it's, you know, if that changed, that's the biggest change, that change happening is what's causing a lot of the ripples right now, I think. And I don't have any info from anyone on that. Obviously that's stuff no one would talk about, and I wouldn't talk to people about either, but it's just, that's what it seems like to me.
Interesting. All right. A little bit of time left, and I want to go back to the broadcasting thing. Mm-hmm. Who's your favorite sports broadcaster? And then I also want to know who your favorite wrestling broadcaster
is. We're talking all time?
All time.
It's got to be Madden, right? I mean, Madden and Summerall were as good as anybody. Marv Albert, obviously growing up on the Knicks for years, is the voice of my childhood. I really love the Mets broadcast booth of Gary Cohen, Ron Darling. And Keith Hernandez. Mm-hmm. And Darling obviously does national now with TBS or with the Turner family. But Madden and Summerall, like you talked about it when that was like your go-to weekly thing. Madden and Summerall were as good as anybody. I don't really know. I never liked Aikman and Buck because Aikman's a cowboy.
A lot of that
becomes regional for you too, right? When you're talking about broadcasting. And as far as wrestling, obviously, like, Bobby Heenan will always be my favorite, just personality and commentator in wrestling. I obviously love, like, Tony Schiavone now is so reinvented that he is just so much fun to listen to. Because he sounds like he's having so much fun.
Yeah, he does.
Like, he really does sound like he's having a blast. That's really fun to watch and listen to. Obviously, Prime Jim Ross was something that you grew up on. I didn't really grow up on Soli. I watched Soli call matches, but you know you'd have to go Bobby, and then JR, and I Schiavone really like I hated Schiavone in like literally hated Schiavone, and I don't know if it was for the Mick Foley thing. I don't know if it's because WCW got really bad, but like, I would have swore up and down at 14, 15 years old that Tony Schiavone was one of the worst broadcasters of all time. And he came back and he's like, that one needs its own like dark side of the ring. I need like a light side.
He's got to write a book or something to kind of.
I need something because Bobby buried him, you know, in his books a couple of times, from what I remember. And it's just like, you know, Tanae's fantastic, obviously. You know, and he's so smart about so much stuff, and today has so much knowledge, like guys like that. Kevin Kelly, Lenny Leonard, obviously is called every guy now that's went through the indies loves Lenny. Kevin Kelly, there's a lot of guys out there that are really good that have been really good in our lifetime. We're lucky for that.
When you first started doing it, was there a thought in your mind about, you know, when I'm calling this, like, who did it the best? Or not to say if you copied anybody, but who were influential in how you decided that this is how I want to do this?
I wanted to call it like it was real. You know, I wanted to call it like I was calling a sporting event. And I wanted to have personality, and I just didn't want to suck. Like, I was so scared of sucking that scared me more than anything, that just doing a bad job and having everyone say that about me. But Bobby was obviously the one that like Bobby's humor is so great, and his one-liners and stuff like that. Carino, I watched Color Guys because I knew I was the color guy, so like I wanted to know like what they did, how they analyzed things, where they got things in. Jesse Ventura was always good as a kid to me of explaining like why a bad guy did what a bad guy did and made it make sense in the real world. It wasn't just blindly like, oh, you know, my monitor went out. No, he'd be like, Hogan's cheating, or that stuff sticks with you for some reason. Mm-hmm. I can name like the first 10 WrestleManias. I couldn't tell you what happened in the last 10.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's like stuff like Jesse and Bobby that stuck with me as a kid. This is what I watched the most.
Yeah. No, 100%.
You know,
when you're doing the shows, the Triple Manias and such, are you worried about pronunciation? Are you worried about saying words that are more in the Spanish language,
yeah,
and worried about accent and worried, you know, is any of that in the back of your mind when you're doing it?
Yeah, because phonetically Japanese is easier to me than Spanish, and I don't know why. You know, that sounds ridiculous, but if spelt out in English, Japanese phonetics is easy to me, at least. It's very similar, but Spanish phonetics, I screw that up all the time. and like, we'll go over names and they'll say names and I'll try to repeat the names they're saying. And I will actively try to avoid saying those names. If I know I'm going to screw it up, I'll let Dombrowski do it and then jump in with something else, because there are things that for whatever reason, my mouth cannot maneuver in the way that it needs to be said. I can't believe I'm saying Spanish is a hard language to a degree. Like when it comes to the accents and really saying it the way they want it said, that is rough at times. And I get the word jumble then. Like I'm trying to say it, I get the word jumble saying Spanish stuff like Ruleta de Muerte, right? Like that's something. But now you're speaking Spanish, English, Spanish in you. Like,
yeah,
you trip up over yourself.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes I speak just Spanglish, like because I put all three of them together in my head. Because when I was in Japan, we had some luchadors in a room with us. So it was me, two Mexican guys, and then, you know, the Japanese. So like we spoke all three languages at the same time, which made things very interesting also.
Yeah. Jericho's book, or maybe his podcast. I think it's his book first. He talked about like speaking Japanese, not really Japanese, but speaking to, you know, to communicate, and then kind of bringing that back into English. And he would just talk about how having to try and listen to two different languages is like, you know, screw them up and stuff.
I brought one of the guys out to a bar locally. And, you know, it was Eita from Dragon Gate. So, like, he doesn't really speak much English. Spoke a lot. They speak better. They speak more Spanish than they do English. But the way I was talking to him to communicate, the guy at the behind the bar is like, why are you talking to him like he's a child? I'm like, dude, no, that's how, like, if I don't speak slowly, they don't understand me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I have a fast cadence to begin with. So, like, I would have to really slow down my enunciations of things to get the communication going. And people from the outside would always look like I'm being rude. I'm like, I'm not being rude. Like that's how, at least in our world, that's how I learned how to communicate with them. I'm sure it's offensive in real life. I'm sure you wouldn't do that in business, but in our world, it's how we got ourselves by.
When it comes to calling shows at, you know, you mentioned going to the arena and mm-hmm. seeing the crowd, what's special and unique about both Mexico and Japan?
Japan, what was special was definitely like how respectful the fans were, and just walking around and they're scared to even come up to you. You know, they're looking at you, waiting for like permission for me to say, oh, if you want to, like, because they're looking at you and like, you know, they want a picture or something.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, but you're standing there. So you go like, do you want to pick? Oh, and then like they get so nervous, like it's like a scared, it's like a cat, you know, like not knowing if it can jump on the bed or not or do whatever. Mexico, it's they're so into it. Like walking around with Hugo around the arena was like walking with the Beatles. I mean, they were chasing Hugo around, wanting pictures with Hugo, and Hugo's just ignoring everybody. I'm like Jesus. I'm like, Hugo, like.
Yeah.
I guess he's their Jim Ross, right? He's his big personality.
Yeah.
So that part's interesting. The interesting part about Mexico is, I remember we're at the airport and we had a delay, and it was Torus, it was Viano, and it was like one of our handler, like one of the office guys that spoke decent English. So we're all sitting there hanging out. So now Viano doesn't have the mask on, right? And I'm about to say something to him, but then it hit me. I'm like, wait a minute. Like, I can't say his wrestling name.
Right.
He doesn't have a mask on. Like,
right.
What the hell do I call him? Right? I have this like live moment of like, what the hell do I? So I go, I'm like, hey, like what do I call him? Like, I'm trying to get the Iggy on it. They're like,
oh, yeah.
Don Tomas. I'm like, oh, perfect. I wouldn't have that problem in Japan. Japan's unique in the sense that like, when I was over there in 2012, when I was like performer guy for them, we were the heels. So like at the time it was Pac, Swan, Ricochet, myself were the foreigners over there. I wasn't allowed to be out in public with the other foreigners because they were the baby faces and I was with the heel group. So they would drop us off in front of the arena, like five blocks before the arena, and we'd have to walk And they all get off the bus because like we couldn't be together.
Yeah.
So like when you're alone in another country like that, that sucks.
Yeah.
Like so like that the kayfabe stuff is so real in Japan still. That makes that very unique. Mexico, it's unique because it's just they love. I mean, there's a table set up outside with the mask and all the merchandise and all that stuff, and it's just such an atmosphere. Like it's so hard to explain, but it's so cool to be a part of.
What's the match that you're going to be most excited to call this weekend?
I obviously Phoenix and Vikingo is the our dream match. Like mm-hmm. where we're going to go there. These guys are going to fly, do things that you'll never see before. And it's going to be fantastic. Flying all around the world. I mean, Vikingo can do things in the air like no one you've ever seen. Phoenix, obviously, is one of the most spectacular guys in the ring. But then you have the Viano match with Penta where, you know, someone's going to lose their mask. And Viano has had back-to-back, like, show-stealing matches live. Like him in LA Park, the original La Parca from WCW, because I know that gets confusing for people. It confuses me too.
Oh yeah.
Gets very confused. Trying to figure out that lineage of stuff sometimes very confusing, but he just, for a guy that does not look, it reminds me of like what McIntyre said about the Undertaker, where it's like, you saw me like could barely move. Then he goes out there and he's just doing everything. Viano was like that. Like he's walking around. I'm like, this guy can't go out. I'm like, you know, you're thinking to yourself as a broadcaster, you're like, there's nothing worse than calling a match that sucks.
Yeah.
Like, I'll tell you that right now. Cause like it's hard to be good. You're bored, their audience is bored. You all know. So you're like going in, like, I'm like, oh, how great could that guy went out there and killed it two nights in a row. And he has these matches. It's very like it reminds me of Memphis that they're ripping the mask, they're bleeding, they're brawling all over the place. There's going to be so much emotion in that matchup that's going to be very, very interesting to zone in on and watch. And like at the end of the day, like either way, like that's going to be either the Mendoza family, they lose a mask again, or Penta loses a mask. And I'm going to be on the call for that. That's a pretty cool when it's all over and you know, you don't take anything. You can't take a U-Haul to it with a hearse, right? Like when it's all said and done, like to call a match like that, that's pretty cool, man. That's like one of those moments where you're like, wow, like no one's going to understand it. You know, and I might be sitting in somewhere 20 years from now at a Denny's telling this story at the diner's breakfast counter. But for us, for people that know, it's a very cool moment.
So people will be able to buy this on Fight TV.
Yeah.
See, I would have if I was in charge of the marketing, I'd have been like, I'm going to give all of our U.S. talent affiliate links. I'm going to tell them to use the affiliate links. And then we can kind of see who's able to sell the show for us a little bit, because if you know, I could send out the Larry Dallas affiliate link, buy the show from here. Like let's, but
make me some more pesos.
Exactly, you get a little cut of that. But so Fight TV, October 15th, Triple Mania 30, night 3, 9 p.m. Eastern, should be a lot of fun, and I'm excited. After you're going to be done with the show, and then you can tell me the stories about anything that happened, if it was easy, if it was hard, if somebody's power went out, didn't work.
This is a big show to be doing from home. Like this is this is nightmare scenario doing from home. You know, I was at MetLife Stadium when the power went out, like a Monday night game or a Sunday night game years ago. Like these are the moments like this is what I'm going to, my nightmare Friday night and all day Saturday. What's going to keep me up is going to be like, does it rain? Does something bad happen? I live in New York, and I live in like, I don't live in where you're going. You're going up to Canada.
Yeah.
But there's trees around here. Things go wrong in bad weather where I live. And that's going to scare me the entire weekend once I start drilling down on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Are they going to try and continue to do the three shows, or was this just special for 30?
I think Dorian said they might continue it. I think that it's, And obviously Cubs fan would know better than I would about, I think these replaced traditional shows around time periods that were big.
The other branded shows.
Yeah. So I don't know. I know it was a cool idea and it was great for me. You know, obviously I got more paydays, but you know, very Kevin Nash style here now in the shoot interview.
And I mean you're not there. I'm assuming it's just like, they're cutting budget somewhere, or like, did they tell you why you were doing it home instead?
They haven't said a word to me about it. And to be honest with you, you know, I you know, the Mets are in a playoff run here. and if they're playing the Dodgers next weekend, you know, if I could be home Friday night watching the game and get done with the show on Saturday and put the game on, if knock on wood, we knock out San Diego tomorrow, you know, or this will be Wednesday when this airs.
Yeah, so
this
might actually. We got to preface it. Like we're having this conversation over the weekend before the Wednesday, so we don't know what happens in the baseball game.
The Mets are down 1-0. You know, in the series, I've been a panic all day and haven't left my house. But they might be going to LA, and I might have major baseball going on next week that I want to watch.
Yeah.
So in that regard, it'll be cool to be home. Because I trust me, I was thinking about that. Like I was like, Mets are the best run they've ever been on. Of course, I'm going to Mexico, and they're gonna be like, you know, NLCS. Now, of course, you know, I'm not gonna go to Mexico, and they're not gonna be in NLCS. So it doesn't matter for me. So I'm getting both things taken from me.
All right. So yeah, check it out. Triple Mania 30, night 3. Thanks to Larry for doing this.
Thank you.
I told my partner John, you know, I said, we can't go dark. Like, I don't like taking a week off. Sometimes I have to take a week off with We're Live Pal with Andrew Zarian, but you know, Andrew's got a lot of followers. Andrew's out there, people will come back. But
Andrew's a numbers guy, right?
Yeah, I'm just a little worried about, you know, whenever you miss a day, what if nobody even cares? And then I'm like, oh man, no one even cared that we were gone. So I wanted to make sure that we did a show. So thank you for doing this.
My pleasure.
I'd been wanting to talk to you for a little while anyway. So I think it worked out.
Well, one day we'll come back and we'll do like a challenge and Survivor and Big
there we go.
Theme podcast. So we can get into all that stuff because that's been, you know, challenges back this week too.
It is. I've been watching the little docu-series that they've been doing on MTV.
I got a bunch of it DVR'd. So I got to, you know, that's next on my list.
They put some production into it. It was way better than I thought it would be.
And it's 30 years since 90210 debuted like yesterday, right? Wasn't it? So yeah, it's a
crazy
time. This is a landmark time for you.
You know? Crazy times. All right, man. Thank you to Larry. I'm Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace.
Thank you guys.